Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Well, today we're just definitely living in an insane world, and we live in, if you live in the United States, an insane empire. We have had the WikiLeaks documents come out about the war in Afghanistan. And really, was anybody surprised to learn that civilians have been killed and the U.S. military has been covering up? Well, I don't think very many people listening to this program found anything to surprise them in the WikiLeaks documents that were leaked from the war in Afghanistan on Friday when I was awaiting the birth of my new grandson, who was born Saturday. 52 civilians were killed in Helmand Province. And then yesterday, we tape on Wednesday to air the show on Sunday. Yesterday was Tuesday, and Congress, the Democratic Congress, voted another $33 billion more to continue the war of terror that the United States is committing across the world. And there's increased hostilities to Venezuela, to North Korea, to Iran. And in addition to where we are already bombing the crap out of places like Afghanistan and Pakistan, and people are still dying in Iraq. So instead of being complacent and complicit, like we have been being for the last 18 months since the changer replaced the decider as President of the United States, we have to step it up because things are getting more urgent than ever, and it's not the time to wait or be complicit with the administration. It's time to get into action. And our first guest is a very good friend of mine. She's on the National Steering Committee of World Can't Wait, and she's the president of Sustainable Orphanages. And today we are going to talk about her work in Haiti and her work around sustainable orphanages. And she's not only a committed activist, but we were cellmates for 52 hours in Washington, D.C. Jails. And, of course, I'm talking about Elaine Brower. Elaine, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thanks for having me, Cindy.
Well, of course. And that was a longer than usual introduction, but I just feel like this nation is flipping out.
Oh, yeah, it's more than flipping it. We've turned definitely the corner of fascism. There's no doubt about it. We're a police state. We're an empire. We're an imperialistic hegemonist, however you say it, country, and that's taking advantage of people not only here but around the world. And everyone is paralyzed. They're not doing anything about it.
Did you go to the national conference in Albany over the weekend?
Yeah, we were in Albany. I went there Saturday to Sunday. There were about 700 people registered there. But, you know, the average age of people there was 50. Everyone was, you know, from the Vietnam era. There were very few young people. People were committed, but, you know, standoffish. It wasn't, you know, we're going to get out there and end what's going on type of attitude. It was more of a wait-and-see attitude. Let's plan for a march 9 months from now. Let's, you know, plan for something next April. It's ridiculous. There are crimes being committed every day. People around the world are dying and suffering because of what this country is doing in our names, and they're, you know, enjoying the Crown Plaza Hotel in Albany.
Well, that's my problem with, you know, I was scheduled to go there, but then my son's partner went into labor, so I had to come home. I was actually in Albany in the airport for an hour and a half, and then I had to fly home because she was in labor. I was planning on going there, but I was planning on just saying exactly what you said. It's not time to be gathering together, you know, as the few people in this country who are against the wars and against the empire, to gather together for a weekend out of the way somewhere where the empire can't see us, doesn't care that we're meeting, doesn't, you know, have any idea that, you know, there is an anti-war movement. And then, you know, we go and we just, like, pass resolutions, like you said, to support something that's months in the future when people are dying. And it's just so frustrating to me. And I don't, you know, I didn't want to go, but I was going to go and just tell these people that. And, of course, I'm sure everybody would get mad at me because, you know, when I wrote the Requiem for the anti-war movement, I heard that I offended a lot of people. Well, too bad. People are dying.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, fortunately, World Can't Wait is out there. We we submitted a resolution at the last minute defending Bradley Manning, asking people to, you know, pass this petition around to free Bradley Manning and to show the WikiLeaks collateral murder video in their hometowns projected on the walls of recruiting centers, you know, to get the public involved, to get the public to see exactly what's happening. And we had an evening conference where Ethan McCord, who was there with the 216th Division in Iraq when in 2007 when the two Reuters photographers were killed, and he read a wonderful, heartwarming, heart-moving statement about how he felt when he took those two children out of the van who had been indiscriminately shot at from an Apache helicopter. And fortunately, we did gather about 125 people in the room that night. It was dinner time. They allowed us to use the main room for this. But the rest of the people went off to have dinner. They had absolutely no interest in, you know, watching this, listening to his statement, being motivated by it, wanting to actually do something in the streets, to talk to the general population. Seems like all we do is preach to the choir, and it's just not going to work that way. And I have to say that, you know, today there were a lot of emails that went out about how wonderful it was that we had 112 Democrats vote against the war funding bill.
God.
Well, you know what? Yeah, I mean, they're saying, oh, this is just great. Well, I don't think if you ask the Afghan people or the people in Pakistan if this was so great for them, how could this be great? Another $37 billion out of our pockets to fund this war? And they're going to keep doing it. And they keep saying, well, you know, we just have to keep talking to the Democrats. They'll come around. It's 10 years in Afghanistan. They're not going to come around.
Well, you know, what do they say? Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. And it doesn't matter if 112 people voted against it because, like you said, the bombs are still going to drop. And, you know, when are people going to wake up to the fact that the outcome of the vote is a foregone conclusion? And the Democrats actually get together and say, you can vote no, you can vote no, you have to vote yes. You know, you can afford to vote yes, you know, and that's what they do.
Right.
And they know how many Republicans are going to vote no and how many Republicans are going to vote yes. And I'm sorry, but yesterday's vote was a decisive victory for war. There's nothing to be happy about in that vote yesterday.
Especially since, you know, the WikiLeaks came out, the documents, 92,000 pages of documents, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, as Julian Assange said, about what goes on in Afghanistan and the war crimes that are being committed, came out on Sunday night, and they voted yesterday, and they still voted to fund this war. So there has to be something wrong with that picture. The only way we're ever going to end this debacle is to get out in the streets and let the government know that we are ungovernable. I keep saying that. I hear you say it. Mm-hmm. I hear a few other people say it. But it's like people just don't want to get out of their comfort zones. And it's not going to end by voting or by hoping to vote or by, you know, listening to these speeches, oh, I'm going to change things. How did things change? In fact, I think they changed to the worse. So,
well,
you
that's
know,
right.
Yeah. This system of government, whether or not it was ever set up to work or it didn't work, it doesn't work now, and that's the way I look at it. In my lifetime, it's not working. It's not working for the people that are stopped and frisked here in New York City. The horrible conditions that most of the country lives under in urban areas. We were in Detroit for the social forum. The burned out. There's 10,000 abandoned buildings in downtown Detroit. It's just not working. They're not helping the average person in this country. And people have to stop being afraid to stand up and say, we're not going to take it anymore.
Well, just before we go on to your work in Haiti, I do want to point out that people can support Bradley Manning, who is being accused of leaking the video and the collateral murder tape. They can support him. They can go to courage2resist.org. And I donated some money for his legal defense fund, and people can support Bradley there. And Ethan McCord will be the guest on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox next week. So I just want to make those two announcements before we go on. But your frustration with the lack of citizen outrage in this country, and the lack of even people who are outraged don't get in the streets. You know, they think that all they have to do is call Congress or sign a petition or whatever, and things will be better. It's like yesterday, I got so many emails from different organizations saying call Congress and tell them to vote no on the war. So you know what that's setting us up for? That's setting us up for failure. That's just saying if we didn't do our job, we didn't make enough calls. Well, Dianne Feinstein admitted she got 80,000 calls when the bailout was being proposed back in October of 2008. Her office got 80,000 calls, and she said, well, I know what's best for you. I'm going to vote for it anyway. So we know it doesn't matter if everybody in this country called. They would do what their corporate paymasters tell them to do anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your frustration with this led you... Of course, your frustration with what's going on in the empire led you to Haiti after the earthquake and led you to the work that you're doing right now to help people who are directly affected by what, you know, the corporatocracy that we have in the world. So tell my listeners about the work that you're doing down in Haiti.
Well, right after the earthquake, you know, we all were very upset about what happened. You know, our hearts went out to Haiti, and I've been dealing with this for 9 years with wars and death and destruction. You know, my son did 3 combat tours as a Marine in Afghanistan and Iraq, and people were sending so much money to Haiti. I decided that I didn't want to do that, and when Obama said he was going to send in 3,200 at the time Marines, I said, oh, no, they're not going to send in Marines because I know how Marines operate. So my daughter and I decided to go to Haiti, and we spent 2 weeks there handing out our own medical supplies and food that we carried with us. We met wonderful people, and the Haitian people are just so warm and friendly. Even in that mess that they were in, I was not afraid, and we met up with... a priest there who begged us to go to his orphanage. They lost their school, and there were 70 children there, barefoot, very little clothing, no food, no water, nothing, just absolutely nothing. And we decided that we were going to set up a foundation to help these children get back to school, get some food in their stomachs, and that's what we've been doing. We've been working directly in Croix de Bouquet. We actually have Haitian workers there who are working with our project called Sustainable Orphanages for Haitian Youth. And we just started it, and people are recognizing us. I've met with some international figures. I haven't had much luck getting food shipments there. That's a whole other story. They're actually holding on to the food in Haiti. They're holding on to the money, thanks to Clinton and Bush. And I have direct contact with people there who tell me that they're starving and they have no housing. I mean, you saw just last week, Sean Penn was out there showing the tent cities. They're still living in, they're not even tents, they're tarps. And there's hundreds of thousands of them.
Who's holding on to the food shipments and the money?
Well, I was told by people on the ground there that what the UN is actually holding it, and they have it sitting there, and they're using it to bribe people. This is what I'm told.
What?
They're using it to bribe the people in the tents because they claim that there's a lot of crime, and I know you've heard that there's gangsters running around with machetes, and it's true. I mean, women are being abused. So the UN has held back the food, telling the people, if you give up these criminals, we will give you food. So basically what's happening is they're giving each other up. It's kind of like a situation in Afghanistan in the beginning,
right,
when they were handing out money to people, say, if you turn in somebody, you know, who you think is a member of Al-Qaeda or the Taliban, we'll give you money. And that's exactly what they're doing in Haiti. And I know this because I've talked to people there almost every single day. I just got an email. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I just got an email today from the father who told me that he used to get, before the earthquake, sometimes the UN would deliver food, sometimes other groups would come by. He said now he went to the UN and they told him, oh, we don't take care of Croix de Bouquet any longer. So who does? Where is all this food and money? I have had to raise money to buy food for them so that they can eat. And I've been at this now 6 months.
And you're spending a lot of your own money, too. And this would probably be a good time to tell my listeners where they could donate, they could go and donate.
Well, if you go to our website, Sustainable Orphanages for Haitian Youth, you can read about what we're doing. And there's a donate page there, which will take you to our fiscal sponsor. We are in the process of becoming a tax-exempt not-for-profit organization. So eventually we're going to be able to get our own funds directly to us. But right now, if you want to make a tax-deductible online donation, go to our website, read about what we're doing, or you could just mail me a check directly. All the information is on the website.
Okay, awesome. But I was going to ask you, what did you think about when, first of all, just like in New Orleans, the damage to Haiti started occurring long before the natural disaster. You know, the lack of attention, the poverty, the infrastructure failing and crumbling and decaying. You know, there was a stronger earthquake in Chile. And there was not that much damage, or as much damage as in Haiti. But what did you think when Obama appointed Bush and Clinton to oversee the relief efforts there?
Well, that's why I went down there, because I knew that there was something running amok once again in Haiti. Haiti's been oppressed for however hundreds of years, and they've had many coups, they've had horrible government structures, and it's all been influenced by the United States, directly or indirectly through the UN. And when you speak to people in Haiti, they know this. They don't like the American military being there. And I realize that there's an awful lot of issues there because of what we've done. We actually destroyed their rice exporting business. Farmers moved into Port-au-Prince. This is what I learned as I studied more about Haiti, because they couldn't farm their lands anymore, and they were trying to find jobs in the city, and the structures that were built were, you know, below grade. I saw them myself. Some of them stood, some of them didn't. And they're still doing the same thing. I've spoken with people in other foundations who said that right now everything is being controlled by the Clinton-Bush Foundation, and what they're doing is they're actually having a reconstruction plan for Haiti, and they're holding back all the funds so that they can go ahead and build sweatshops and build resorts on the beaches, because they have the most beautiful beaches there. And, you know, unfortunately, the people that I speak with in Haiti, they've given up. They'll say to me, you know what, if we can have a job, even if we make $30,000 a year or $20,000 a year, it's more than what we're making now. Let them come in and do what they have to do, because we're tired of living like this. And it's really sad, and this is how this country takes advantage.
Right, right. Well, just like, you know, I always put Cuba up as an example because Cuba is poor and the people there are poor, but they resist that globalization. They resist the empire and, you know, they're very proud. And they should be proud that, you know, for 50 years their revolution has been able to withstand the stain of the empire.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand being tired of,
right.
of living that way and just abject poverty.
It's beyond what you could imagine. When I got there, I realized how awful it was. And I'm not a relief worker. I'm just, you know, a mom who got involved. And I, you know, we all see pictures on television of various countries in Africa. It's that bad and worse. The 10 cities that I visited, and on my blog, Elaine Brower at World, Elaine at worldcan'twait.net, I have all the videos uploaded of when we were there and the children and the tent cities and where we were, and you could get a feel and a flavor for how these people are suffering. So they don't, you know, we could sit back and pass judgment and say, no, the empire can't go in there and do this, but the people on the ground say, help, come help us, please. We don't want to live like this any longer.
So tell my listeners what else they can do besides go to your site and donate some money.
Well, that they could. There's other things we're doing. We're actually sending in-kind donations, shoes, clothing, books. They have no school books, no supplies. If people want to ship me things, or I'm here in New York City, if anybody's listening, that's on the East Coast. I could either pick it up or you could bring it to me. Anything you might have that could make life easier for the children, or if you happen to be an engineer and you have access to solar panels or water filtration systems, or they don't even have a toilet. There's no sanitation facilities. I can't even get one in Haiti. I have to have it imported from somewhere. So if anyone knows that, they can email me. It's on the website. My address is there. And just really take an interest. This, Haiti didn't go away. The problem still exists. And I just got very close to the people there and the children. And I feel like as Americans, we have to do something to stop the pain and suffering in the world. I can't seem to stop what's going on in Afghanistan or in Gaza or in Iraq, but I was able to help in Haiti, and it did make me feel better to be able to do something productive, because sometimes as a peace activist, you get really frustrated and you want to bury your head in the sand. It's very easy to say, you know what, I'm going to walk away from this because, look, I have a roof over my head. I live in a nice house. I don't need to be out protesting. I don't need to get arrested and spend 52 hours in jail, freezing,
right.
Sleeping on the floor. You know, I do it because I want results. I want to redress my government, but they're just not going to listen. So I needed some way to feel as if I was doing something to give back to humanity rather than take away. And I think people should do that. I think that, you know, and this cause is, you know, the best I could see out there right now.
Well, and if you are able to very quickly help and see results without having to go through, you know, tons of red tape and layers of bureaucracy or whatever, I'm sure that it does have a really, it has a real positive effect on your life and on your activism, because there is a lot of frustration in what we do, because we don't actually, very, very seldom do we see results. Now, speaking of results, you also had a victory very locally in Philadelphia. So tell my listeners about that. That was a great day when that happened.
Oh yeah, we were really excited when we heard that. There's a place called the Army Experience Center, and it's in Philadelphia Mall, and it opened up in September of 2008. And in 2009, we decided we were going to start protesting this place. So we did. We had some creative protests, And the Army Experience Center is a 14,000 square foot warehouse type place where they have over 20 Xbox gaming stations where children as young as 13 could come in and play violent video games. And not
right.
only that, they have a whole room in the back where they have this IMAX screen and machine guns mounted on Humvees, and people could actually see it by going to our website, shutdowntheaec.org. But anyway, so we protested, and I was arrested there twice. I was held at the Philadelphia Roundhouse, which is not one of the nicest places to be.
Right.
And eventually, the Army just announced in May that they were going to shut the place down. Of course, their excuse was saying, oh, it was just a test center, and they weren't going to keep it open anyway. But to actually have the military close down something they spent $12 million on was such a victory. And you know what happened? We got a coalition together of various peace and anti-war groups in the Northeast area, and we just hammered the hell out of this place every weekend, anytime we could, and I think they got a lot of bad press. So they're closing it down actually the end of this week, so we're not going to go there and have a party. So that was our victory at the Army Experience Center in Philly, and you know what? You know how, like I said, what happened was we all came together and we pushed back, and we made a difference, and that's what we need to do about these wars.
And that's something that people can do on a real local level. They don't have to travel. They don't have to, you know, expend a lot of energy. If there's a center like that or anything approaching that around you, you can protest there. You can protest at recruitment centers. You can go to high schools and hand out materials to high school students when they come out of classes. And that's something that has an immediate impact, like your orphanage in Haiti. And Elaine Brower, I would like to thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox and for keeping up the hard struggle, because I do know that it's hard.
Thanks, Cindy, and congratulations on your new grandchild.
Oh, thank you. That's another victory for the peace movement.
That's right, yeah.
It's my peace tribe. I'm collecting my peace tribe. So thanks for being on the show, Elaine.
All right.
Hopefully we can talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Who are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh. Your elders grew high, and so please help them with your youth. They see the truth before they can die. Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by. Them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just
just look at them and sigh and know they love you.
Okay, that was Elaine Brower on the National Steering Committee of World Can't Wait, and the president of Sustainable Orphanages for Haitian Youth was just on the show. And our next guest, speaking of making a local difference that will have a global impact, is a war resister. He's been on the show before. Again, he was one of my co-defendants in our last, what I called the trial of the century, that the government spent so much money and so much time in trying to convict six people of, things that were just barely infractions. And he's on the national board of Iraq Vets Against the War. And, of course, I'm speaking of Mathis Chereau. Mathis, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks for having me.
Hi, it's great to have you on again. And so today you're in Austin, Texas, and you're working on another very important cause that can have, like I said, an impact on individuals, on the community, but can also have a wider impact.
We got to edit that out. We're in Killeen, Texas.
Oh, you're in Killeen. Sorry.
Yeah, we're right outside of Fort Hood.
Okay, so I'll start over again.
Okay.
So today you're in Killeen, Texas, outside of Fort Hood, and I've spent a lot of time there. My son was stationed at Fort Hood. And, of course, Camp Casey in Crawford's not that far, so we did a lot of activism in Killeen also when we were during the Bush administration when we had our Camp Casey's in Crawford. But you're in Killeen, Texas, and you're working on a project that can have impact on an individual, on the community, and, of course, on a global perspective, too. So, Mathis, tell my listeners what you're doing in Killeen, Texas.
Sure, Cindy. Well, I'm here at the Under the Hood Cafe. It is a GI coffee house dedicated to fostering an environment in which soldiers can discuss issues of peace and also issues they're having with their commands and with the military itself, and talk in a free way about the issues at play. And I'm actually here as well with many other vets and organizers, and with me now is actually Bobby Wittenberg, who is another veteran, and he's recently been speaking out more and more. He is a veteran of Iraq and a Purple Heart veteran, and does a lot of work around connecting people with the realities of what goes on there, and I'll let him talk about that. But we are in the near future here looking at a deployment of the 3rd ACR, several thousand soldiers going to Afghanistan. So yeah, we are organizing. In fact, the day after tomorrow, we're having a rally here at Fort Hood in opposition to the deployment of several thousand soldiers from here next month to Afghanistan. As well, we're continuing to do work in the community here around Fort Hood with military families and soldiers. And we're continuing to work to support GI resistance, and even there's a lot of buzz around that right now, especially with the deployment coming up. But we are
that's
in the midst
really,
of...
I hate to interrupt you, but that's really important because not very many people realize that Fort Hood in Killeen, Texas, was like the focal point of GI resistance during the Vietnam War. It was like the flashpoint where it basically happened, and there was a coffee house back then called Oleo Strut, and I believe that the Under the Hood is kind of trying to revive that sentiment and that community support that happened during the Vietnam War.
Indeed, that's right. In fact, the building which the Oleo Strut used to inhabit is simply right around the corner from Under the Hood. And like the Oleo Strut, there are active duty soldiers who come walking through our doors every day looking to unravel the lies which have been fed to them by their command and by their government. And so it's a small operation now. It's growing. We are looking at the ways in which we're doing fundraising and the like, and figuring out how we're going to expand for the future and make things more sustainable, which is why this week we're having a sustainer drive, where we're encouraging folks to go to our website. We're doing this entirely online at underthehoodcafe.org and become sustaining donors of the work we do here, directly supporting GI resistance, fostering conversations among active duty soldiers about why the wars are wrong. It's an incredibly important operation, and I'm even going to turn it over to Bobby here and let Bobby talk about his experience with Under the Hood, because it's meant an enormous amount to him.
Bobby Wittenberg, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Hi, thanks, Cindy.
It's nice to talk to you, and Bobby is one of my friends, and it's always good to have friends on the show. And so, Bobby, I understand that Under the Hood Cafe has been an important part of your development as an activist and reintegrating back into society after your deployment to Iraq.
Yeah, definitely. The cafe opened last year around March, and I started coming out here before we really had a regular crowd, and it's been wonderful to watch, more and more soldiers coming in here, more and more families coming in here as they're starting to see the problems within the military and within the greater U.S. foreign policy in general. And it's been really great for me because, this is definitely a passion for me, creating communities of resistance, and it's been a great place to come and meet with other people who have been through the same kind of things, and we have a lot of similar goals with our activism and everything, and being right here, like being right by the base, this is the front lines, and it's really challenging, but also really encouraging to be right here on the ground, like seeing what's happened, like hearing what the soldiers have to say, and hearing what's going on in their lives, and seeing their determination to make a change.
Have you seen any increase of urgency or concern since the WikiLeaks documents came out? Just like on Sunday night, there was like over 91,000 pages of documentation from the Afghanistan war, which of course doesn't surprise anybody that's in the movement or that's been working, in these movements for quite a while. But have you seen any kind of increased concern and urgency since they came out?
Well, yeah, definitely. Here we're starting to see that right now is really the time that we need to be organizing. The soldiers are starting to find out, it's becoming undeniable what we've known all along, that the U.S. military does target civilians, that this is something that they know is out of control and unwinnable. And as all these truths come about, those of us who are veterans and active duty are becoming increasingly, there is a sense of urgency, because now there's no excuse for denying the purpose these wars serve anymore. So absolutely, we're definitely feeling a sense of urgency, feeling like this is the time that we can possibly bring this whole thing to a halt.
And in your because of course, like my son, like Mathis, and like all the troops that are serving or have served in this so-called global war on terror, you were all volunteers, and there are, there are various, for every volunteer, there's different reasons why people volunteer. But what have you come to? What is your understanding? What have you come to a conclusion about what the reasons for, using the military in these ways? What is the real reason? Is the real reason for freedom and democracy, or to support some kind of, some kind of honorable ideal?
Oh, absolutely not. And that's not to say that, I mean, many times the people who enlist or whatever do have honorable intentions. They want to protect their home. They want to protect their family. But the use of the military by the government of the United States is and always has been for, you know, global conquest, expansion, the creation of markets, control of resources, and we're definitely starting to see that more and more. Just look at a map, look where the interventions have been, look at the time they've been. It's really hard to deny.
And you know, you're a brilliant thinker. I must, you know, tell everybody that, you know, your analysis of what the problem is really right on. What do you think is the root problem of the violence and of the wars and of the economic oppression?
Well, it always comes down to, you know, your systems of dominance and coercion, you know, capitalism, statism, patriotism, nationalism, those racism, sexism, heterosexism, patriarchy, all of these combine to keep people oppressed at different levels, and to elevate a ruling class and to oppress an underclass. And so, you know, these things all work together to keep us all oppressed, and we can't just approach this as if we're trying to stop a war. You know, we have to be continually striking at root causes, such as, you know, our representative government, which takes the hands out of the people and puts it into the hands of a ruling elite. You know, we have to strike at capitalism that keeps us all economically oppressed and at various levels, and we have to continue to strike at these kind of root causes, because other than that, it's kind of like trying to chop down a tree by pulling off leaves. Like, you have to strike at the, and you have to uproot a problem, or it'll continue to manifest itself over and over again, as we've seen.
Well, thank you so much, Bobby. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Can you tell my listeners the website one more time? Mathis already gave it to us, but just one more time, can you give the website to my listeners?
Yeah, that website is www.underthehoodcafe.org.
And we will have all the websites listed on my website, CindySheehanSoapbox.com, too. So, Bobby, thank you for being on the show. Thanks, Mathis, for me. And we hope that you're sustaining your fundraiser for Sustainers is successful. So thank you, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Cindy.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Bye.
So thank you so much for listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I hope it was a very informative soapbox for you today. And like I said, all of those websites will be listed at CindySheehanSoapbox.com, so we can link to this important work that my very dear friends are doing for humanity and to strike at the root cause of the problem. So I'd like to thank my guests, Elaine Brower, Mathis Chereau, and Bobby Wittenberg. Elaine was speaking to us from New York City, and Bobby and Mathis spoke to us from Killeen, Texas. I'd like to thank, as always, my engineer, Scott, my webmaster, Rich, my producer, Mikey, and you, most of all, for listening. I am Cindy Sheehan, and you've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Thank you.
I must make my witness. Have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be.
We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.